Morning. Today's daf in Makos is daf Beis. We're starting the new Masechta this morning. The Makos is a short Masechta. It's 21 blots, three prakim. But really, truth of the matter is, it's probably continuation of Masechta Sanhedrin. And that point will be borne out a little bit later on this morning as we get to a point in the Gemara in today's daf, which you're going to see very clearly that this is really just Amshacha. It's just a continuation of Sanhedrin. There's another reason why that makes perfect sense. I've mentioned this before. I got this trick from Rabbi Kornfeld. And just as long as we're starting a new Masechta, a plug to his website. It's really excellent. Dafyomi.co.il. It's an excellent website which has tremendous resources. He was a Rebbe of mine years ago, back when I was in yeshiva. So Rabbi Kornfeld taught me this trick, and it's just absolutely correct. Meaning the order of Masechtas in every Seder. When you look at a Seder and you go down the Masechta, so what order does it follow? So if it doesn't really, in other words, especially like in Moed, for example, doesn't follow any particular chronology, meaning, yeah, Shabbos, but, you know, Shabbos is important, but in other words, what's the chronology? So basically he taught me that that the Masechtas follow in terms of size of Parakim. Meaning you look at each Masechta, you look at the size of the Parakim, and basically that's the order of every Seder. So for example, the Moed, so the largest Masechta in Moed is Shabbos, 24 Parakim. So 24 Parakim, so it gets the number one slot. And you go down Seder by Seder, and you go Moed, and you just keep going in Moed, and you'll see that every Masechta after that is in Parakim, just a little bit shorter, until you get to the end, and then you're hitting Masechtas like Moed Katan and Chagiga, which are only three Parakim. So anyway, so that is... that's Moed, and it works for every Seder, meaning this rule of following the number of Prakim in every Masechta, and the larger Prakim are going to be earlier, so that is that's the general rule throughout Shas, in terms of setting up the Sedarim. So now we're in Ezekiel. So when you're in Ezekiel, so what's the first Masechta in Ezekiel? So it's not Baba Kama, but rather it's Baba Kama, Baba Metzia, Baba Basra, meaning that's all one large Masechta, that's 30 Prakim. The next Masechta is Sanhedrin. Sanhedrin now has got 11 Prakim, which we just finished. And then the next one is Makos. Makos is three Prakim, meaning it just doesn't work. It doesn't fit. In other words, because the next Masechta coming up is going to have more than three Prakim. So it doesn't work. So again, it's just another, it's a good idea that really Makos is really an addendum to Sanhedrin. It really turns Sanhedrin from 11 Prakim into 14 Prakim. And it makes a lot more sense. That really Makos is just a continuation of Sanhedrin. How did it become now? It became its own Masechta? All right, so that part I don't know. But more practically, it's really extension of Sanhedrin. I just want to add one more point. In Sanhedrin, really, the 10th parak is the 11th, and the 11th is the 10th. Somehow they got flipped, but really and you'll see it's a technical point, but you'll see that's important for a little bit later on this morning. So really, the end of Sanhedrin is really the end of the 10th parak, not the end of the 11th parak. Okay. Anyway, you'll see why that's important later on. Okay, with all that stated, let's start with our Mishnah, and let me just give now an introduction specific to Makos. Makos is broken up into three parakim. The first parak deals with Edom Zomim, an exciting topic, a fun topic, one that really is going to require a little bit of thinking power, but that's the first parak. Second parak has to do with Gullus, with killing somebody b'shogeg. Inadvertent murder. I think in this country they call it something like manslaughter. So I'm not a lawyer, so don't ask for legal definitions here in this country from me. But in other words, something like manslaughter. And then the third parak talks about makos. In other words, the punishment of makos when a person violates a law in the Torah. That's makos in a nutshell. And we obviously now starting the first parak today of makos, so we're going to be talking about Edom Zomimim. So by Edom Zomimim found in Parsha Shoftim. So the Edom Zomimim Parsha, super interesting. You have a pair of witnesses who come and testify in court against the defendant, accusing him of whatever crime he did. And meanwhile, what happens is that they were fabricating. They were making up a story. So it was a total falsification on the part of the witnesses. So the Torah says, interesting. So you know what we're going to do? Vasisim lo kasher zamam lasos lachiv. You do to them what they conspired to do to somebody else. Meaning, since they conspired to do whatever punishment they intended for the defendant, they themselves now are going to get boomeranged and get reciprocated on the exact punishment that was given to them. That's the idea behind Edom Zomimim. So as we're going to see over the course of today's daf in the first parak of Makos, so the principle of Edom Zomimim is very interesting and very entertaining. Entertaining meaning it's just, you know, thought-provoking, but the um, But in terms of application, we're going to see that the application of Eidim Zomimim is going to be highly limited. What we're going to be encountering in this first Mishnah, and the problem that we're going to be dealing with over the course of today and tomorrow, is what if you can't do Vasisim Lo Kasher Zomim Lasos Lachiv? What if, for whatever reason, the punishment cannot be reciprocated upon the Eidim Zomimim? What do you do then? We already saw a hint of this problem at the end of Sanhedrin. At the end of Sanhedrin, we talked about a pair of witnesses testifying against a Bas Kohen, who is committing adultery, where the Bas Kohen is subject to Sreifa. The Boel in question is going to get Chenek. So now you have two punishments. You have Chenek and you have Sreifa. So which punishment do you give the Eidim Zomimim in the event that they turn out to be lying and they were conspiring? And you have to do to them what they wanted to do to the defendant. So do you give them Sreifa or do you give them Chenek? You can't obviously give them both. So which one do you give? So already that's not the end of the world, meaning we didn't choose. But in other words, Chazal chose that it's going to be Chenek and not Sreifa. But in other words, there you have a scenario where already you see shades of, I can't do to them exactly what they conspired to do to somebody else. They wanted to give the Bas Kohen Sreifa and they're not getting Sreifa. Okay, fine. But in our Mishnah over here, the problem is going to be much more pronounced. Where in our Mishnah, we're going to see that literally we cannot do to them what they conspired to do to somebody else for the examples which we're going to illustrate in our Mishnah. So now what? How do you fulfill the mitzvah of Asisim Lo Kasher Zomim Lasos Lachiv? Another general issue that I'll just bring up now, although it's also going to come up in the course of this parak as well, and that is, what are we doing by Eidim Zomimim? We are discrediting them by believing another pair of witnesses. If you think about it, it's really strange. Meaning, the first set of witnesses come and said, you know, that guy did that crime, and he's guilty, and he should get punished in the following manner. And now, along comes the second set of witnesses, what we call, and throughout this parak, the Eidim HaMazimim. Second set of witnesses come along and say, no, the first pair were lying. How do I know that? So the formula of what they have to say is Imanu Ayisim Bamakom Ploni. Well, they were with us at the time when they said that the crime occurred. They were not with the defendant. They were somewhere else. So there's no way they could be telling the truth. Okay. So now what are we going to do? We're going to believe the second set of witnesses over that of the first set of witnesses. When you think about it, there's no logical reason why that should be so. Meaning,
Testifying the event.
Okay. Yeah. Right. Okay. You already know the classic explanation. But if we're I'm just spelling out the question. Meaning we have a second set of witnesses who are also testifying. So as much as the first set could be lying, you know, the second set could be lying as well. So in other words, so I'm going to believe the second set of witnesses over the first set of witnesses. That's strange. It's odd. The Gemara is going to refer to this as a chiddush. It's really a novel idea that we do believe the second set of witnesses over the first set of witnesses. But that's if they say Imanu Ha'isim B'Makom Ploni, they were with us at the time. We are going to believe the second over the first. Phil points out, which is I guess the classic way of saying it, in that the reason why we believe the second over the first is because the second are testifying not about the defendant, but they're testifying about the actual first set of witnesses. It's almost like a new case, so to say. Okay. In other words, that's how it's generally explained, but certainly, if you think about it, it does become a problem. Why believe the second set over the first set of witnesses? With all that stated, let's now begin the Mishnah. Ketzad Eidim Nasim Zomimim. So how do the Eidim become Zomimim? So what the Mishnah introduces us to is the general concept of Eidim Zomimim. The intro to the Mishnah, the preamble to the Mishnah is a little bit strange because we're going to go over a number of examples in this Mishnah which are not Eidim Zomimim, meaning it's not going to look like a classic scenario of Eidim Zomimim. So the preamble to the Mishnah is a little bit strange. The Gemara is going to point that out. We'll get to the Gemara and we'll iron out the first words of the Mishnah. But in the meantime, here are the examples. Meidim Anu B'Ishponishuhu Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza. Let's say they come along, these Eidim, and again, I'm calling them Eidim Zomimim because I'm just, you know, these cases, it's all going to come out the same. They're going to become Eidim Zomimim. So the Eidim come along and say that this guy is the son of a Grusha, son of a Chalutza, meaning they're accusing an alleged Kohen or an established Kohen that, you know what, he does not have Kedushas Kahuna. Because they come forward and they testify, we know his parents and we know his mother, and his mother is a divorcee. Meaning his father married a divorcee. Therefore, his father, this child over here is a Chalal, and therefore does not have the Kedushas Kahuna. Don't call him up for the first Aliyah. He's not going to be duchening. And in time of the Beis HaMikdash, he's not going to be doing the Avodah. He's not going to be getting Truma, etc., etc., etc. In other words, Chalal. He's hollow and devoid of Kedushas Kahuna. That is what these witnesses are accusing him of. And then, now, that accusation has to include in it, I not only do I know the mother, but we were there at the chasna, whatever. In other words, they have to establish that dad married a divorcee. Okay, now, let's even describe where these Edom are Kohanim. Right? Rashi says these Edom are Kohanim. You're for the most part, I agree with you. Happens to be, I know a little bit more. I happen to know other Rishonim disagree. Not disagree, but even discuss this in the context where the Edom are not Kohanim. It's much easier to say that they're Kohanim. So let's say the Edom are Kohanim. So now they testify about this guy who say that, I know everyone thought he was a Kohen, and dad is a Kohen, but he's a Chalal. And now the Edom are proven to be Edom Zomimim. So what should we do? The principle of Edom Zomimim would dictate that we should take the punishment and Vasisim Lokasher Zamam Lasos Lachif, and that we should boomerang and have the punishment get reciprocated to the Edom. The Edom now should become Chalalim, right? I mean, in theory, that's right, but the Mishnah says that's not right. So, Shu Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza, Ein Omrim, just give me a moment, Ein Omrim Yasezeh Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza, Tachtav, we do not say that the Edom Zomimim become Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza, Ela Loka Arbaim. But rather what's going to happen now is that they're going to give some sort of substitute punishment. Instead of them becoming a Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza, they're going to get Makas. Okay. Now, next example in the Mishnah. Let's say they accuse somebody of killing somebody b'shogeg, which means that the punishment for such an individual is that he's going to be sent into Galus. He'll be sent into exile to one of the Ari Miklat. Now, Edom are lying. They made the story up. Another pair of witnesses come along and say, they're not telling the truth because Imanu Ayisim Bamakom Ploni, because they were with us at the time. What do we do to these Edom Zomimim? So again, if we apply the principle of Asisim Lo Kasher Zomim Lasos Achiv, what we should do to them is, we should send them to Galus, right? The mission says, no, we don't. Ein Omrim Yigalazet Tachtav El Aloka Arbaim. Rather, they're going to be receiving a Malkus. Once again, a substitute punishment instead of receiving the punishment of Galus. The obvious question you have to ask is, why are we not going to make them a halal? Why are we not going to send them into Galus? Stay tuned. The Gemara is going to discuss those questions. Danny, go ahead.
In this case, the Mishnah is describing a person's character. They're testifying against a person's character, not about something he did.
I see. In other words, it's not. In other words,
he
didn't.
In the first case,
right? He's not doing a crime.
He's just his own character.
Correct. But there is going to be a punishment in that he's not going to be receiving truma. He's not going to be doing the avoda. So in that regard, he's going to be punished. I understand, not from a corporal standpoint, not from a basin standpoint, but there will be a punishment. He'll have to suffer, right? A consequence as a result of the testimony. Okay. They're testifying, right? So for example, they're testifying about the wedding. Meaning we saw when we were there at the wedding, we saw his father and mother get married. So that's what they're testifying to. And the second set of witnesses to say, you weren't there at the wedding, you were with us. Okay. Okay. Before we start with the Gemara, so we don't do much in terms of other Rishonim. I pretty much stay consistent with Gemara and Rashi. But over here, just to speak out of Tosfos, the first Tosfos over here, which deals with a fundamental issue, and it really touches on a fundamental discussion. Right.
And then the two witnesses that they say.
Okay, in other words, how do they know that that woman was divorced?
Right.
Okay, fine. I understood. In other words, to get through the details of that case, it takes a little bit more. I did oversimplify it, I admit it, but okay, I'm with you. Okay, let's deal with Tosus's issue over here. He has such a fundamental question, and he gives two principled answers. So let me say the Tosus outside. It's the first Tosus on the Amud. We have a general rule when it comes to Edus. In other words, in order for your testimony to be admissible, thank you. So what you have to do is that you always have to be vulnerable. Meaning, if your Edus is going to be credible, you have to be in a position where you can end up getting what you wanted the defendant to receive. And then and only then is your testimony admissible. This is the principle of Edus she'ata yachol lazima, or edus, I should say better, edus she'ata yachol lazima. If your edus is not going to be able to result in you receiving the same punishment as a defendant, so as a general rule, we say that's not edus. And if you think about it, the rule makes a lot of sense. Meaning, we need some sort of incentive for the person not to lie. We need him to know that, look, you can't just go to court and make up stories. There are going to be ramifications and repercussions for what you are saying. And so, look, if you're lying, you're going to receive exactly what you intended that person to get. Okay, good. So that is hopefully a speed bump in the road, a significant speed bump in the road that will get the aide and the aidum to think a little bit more before just coming to court and making up a story. So that's the general rule. And if it's aidus she'i atoya cholazima, and if I can't do to the aidum what they conspire to do to the witnesses, so by definition it's not aidus. That's the general rule when it comes to aidus. So Tosfos over here asks wonderfully. It's a strong question. So over here now, in our Mishnah, we just gave two examples, and in the course of the Gemara, we're going to give another couple of examples, maybe even a fifth example as well. But there are, in our Mishnah, two examples where the Edom are not going to be receiving the reciprocal punishment. And if that's true, so Tosfos asks, well, isn't that now Edom Shiyeto Yechol Azima? And therefore, the Edom shouldn't be admissible from the beginning. That is Tosfos' question. Tosfos in the very top of the on the first Tosfos, Tema. Kevin Dim Huzma in Anasim Ben Grusha Vechalutzim Kein Gambishalo Yuzmu Echias Alpim Ben Grusha Dahachi Hu Ha Emes. I'm sorry, the Nasim Ben Grusha Vechalutzim Kein Gambishalo Yuzmu. I'm sorry, I just reread that line. Echias Alpim Ben Grusha Dahachi Hu Ha Emes Vamai Ha Havila Edish Yatoya Cholazima Veinza Edus. Okay, so really what we're cutting into right now is such a fundamental question. The testimony shouldn't even be submitted from the very beginning. Because I can't do to the Edom what they intended to do to the defendant. So Tosfos gives two answers to this question. Again, I'm just going to speak it out. Tosfos' first answer is that maybe what we could say is that the Malkus is in fact Hazama. Meaning, even though, yes, they're not going to become a Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza, and so they're not getting exactly what they conspired to do to the defendant, but Malkus is a fair substitute. And that Malkus then serves as a din hazama, which then allows us to submit the testimony to begin with. That's Tosfos' first answer. Tosfos again gives a second suggestion, halfway through the...
The first one doesn't apply to the Galut case. They can't send these two to Galut.
We're not going to send them to Galus.
It can be done. It's not because they cannot...
For whatever reason, meaning we don't yet know why we can't do it. But we can't make them a Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza, and we can't send them into Galus for reasons which the Gemara is going to explain.
Ben Grusha is because you cannot be Kohanim or Halal, but physically you cannot put them in the Galus.
No, but assuming that the Edom are in fact Kohanim, so then you could make them Halalim. That's what they wanted to do to the defendant. So you could make them Halalim, and we don't, again, for reasons which we're going to explain when we get to the Gemara, but we don't. And Tosfos says, so what happened to the Edus? How can we accept the Edus? First answer, the Malkus serves as a substitute. And the first answer, by the way, again, I know we could spend a lot of time on this Tosfos. We're not, but in other words, the first answer is really a Chiddush. How can Malkus be a substitute for Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza? It's not the same. Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza, you're going to be affected for the rest of your life. Malkus? Okay, so it'll hurt for a little bit. It's not the same. And for Galus also, Malkus is certainly not the same as Galus. Galus, you're going to be exiled for who knows how long? Malkus, you get hit for a little bit. Okay, but so the first answer, admittedly, is a big chiddush, but that's what Tosfos suggests, that really the Malkus is a din hazama. Or, od yesh lamar, Tosfos halfway down, we could also suggest that for the edus of the Ben Grusha and Ben Chalutza, so the rule of edus she'ata yachol hazima gets waived. Meaning under certain circumstances where we know that we're not going to be able to give the exact punishment to the edim zomimim, so then, the rule, the principle of Edush Yato Yachal Azima gets waived under those circumstances. Okay. Again, two answers to a very basic question of how do we even accept the testimony to begin with. Okay, let's start with the Gemara. HaKeitzad Ein HaEidim Asim Zomimim Mi Ba'ilei. Question number one, the preamble of the Mishnah. It really is, it throws us off. Because the Mishnah introduces us to the opening words of the Mishnah pronounces that here's a case of Edom Zomimim. And then what do we learn in the Mishnah? Cases which are not Edom Zomimim. In fact, the Gemara's first question is, isn't that what the Mishnah should say? The Mishnah should say, Ketzad Ein Ha'edim Nasim Zomimim Mibayilei. And question number two. Va'od Midik Tana L'Kama Naval Amru Lahem Eichatem Edim Sharei Ba'oso Ayom Atem Ha'isim Yamanu B'Malkam Ploni Hare Elu Zomimim. So, you want to know what the case of Edom Zomimim looks like? Look at the Mishnah coming up. All right, in an upcoming Mishnah, we're going to learn together what is the classic scenario of Edom Zomimim. So if you want to attach this preamble to anything, attach it to the next Mishnah, where the Mishnah there gives us the textbook case of Edom Zomimim, where the witnesses say, where the second set of witnesses say to the first set, you can't testify, you were with us at the time. Okay, that's the case of Edom Zomimim. So you want to take the preamble of Ketzad Edom Nasim Zomimim, take it from here and move it to the next Mishnah, not here. So, Tana Hasamkai. So the Gemara says, so here's what we're really going to have to now say. Our Mishnah and the preamble to our Mishnah of Ketzad Edom Nasim Zomimim is really going back to what we learned the Mishnah right before. Now again, what I said in the beginning of Shir today, what we're going to have to do is we're going to have to look back to the last Mishnah. Now the last Mishnah is not the last Mishnah of the 11th Perek of Sanhedrin, but the last Mishnah is rather the last Mishnah of the 10th Perek of Sanhedrin. Right? We're assuming now that 10 and 11 are flipped. In the Gemara, somehow they got flipped. I don't know why, but doesn't matter. Anyway, so now we're looking at the last Mishnah of the 10th Perek of Sanhedrin, which for our purposes right now, we're calling the last Mishnah of Sanhedrin. Fine. What does that last Mishnah say? The Gemara here quotes it. Kol ha-zomimim makdimim la'oso misa. Here's your rule, that when you have Edom Zomimim, they're going to be getting that punishment which they conspired to give to the defendant. Chutz mi-zomimim bas kohen. Ubo Allah. Shein makdim la'oso misa. Ela la'misa acheres. As opposed to the zomimim bas kohen, which I explained in the introduction, they're not going to be getting the exact punishment in which they conspired, because remember, the bas kohen's getting sreifa. The Baal is getting chenek. Which one are they getting? They're only going to be getting chenek, not sreifa. Again, for reasons which we explained already at the end of Sanhedrin. The end of the 10th Perek. So there's a scenario where it's not exactly Edom Zomimim. It's pretty close, but not exactly. V'yesh Edom Zomimim, acherim she'in osim ben din hazama kol ikar. And then there are cases where the Edom Zomimim are going to be getting nothing. Or I should say better, nothing of what the defendant is looking to have received. In our cases in our Mishnah, the defendants were going to get either become a ben chalo, or the defendant was going to get galus, and in these cases, the Edom Zomimim are going to get none of that. They'll get a substitute, they'll get malchus, but they'll get none of the punishment in which the Edom Zomimim conspired. Ela malchus arbaim. So, now, what we're doing is we're taking out. I'm sorry, and let me just read a little bit more in the Gemara. Ketzamidim anu beishponishu ben grusha ben chalutza ina omrim yasuzet ben grusha ben chalutza tachtava elaloke esar baim. Period. So now, basically, what we're going to do is that we're going to take the preamble of our Mishnah, and it really is a bridge. That bridge is what we learned at the end of Sanhedrin to now the beginning of Makos. Meaning, when the Mishnah opens up with the words ketzad eidim nasim zomimim, it means remember the last Mishnah on Sanhedrin. Again, what I explained is the last Mishnah in Sanhedrin. Remember the last Mishnah in Sanhedrin that dealt with Edom Zomimim? So here it is now, basically a progression of classic Edom Zomimim, where they're going to get exactly what they conspired, right? Quasi Edom Zomimim, where they're going to get more or less what they conspired, meaning in the case of Bas Kohen. So they're not getting exactly because there's Sreifa and Chenek on the table. They're only going to be getting Chenek, not Sreifa. And then we move to our Mishnah, and our Mishnah is not Edom Zomimim, meaning they're not going to be receiving the punishment that they conspired to give to the defendant. So that is the progression that takes us from the end of Sanhedrin to the beginning of Makos, and that's the preamble of our Mishnah, Ketzai Edom Nasim Zomimim, meaning this is how Edom Zomimim works from exactly to mostly to none of it. Minani Mili. Okay, now we move on in the Gemara. We are towards the bottom of Beis Amud Aleph, and we're asking a really simple question. Why? Why don't we do to them what they conspired? Why don't we take the Edom Zomimim and make them a Ben Chala? Now, granted, by the way, Ben made this point earlier. If the Edom Zomimim were Yisraelim and not Kohanim, then it's kind of self-understood, self-evident. However, if the Edom Zomimim were in fact Kohanim, why not? Why not make them a Ben Chala? And certainly in the case of Galus, why not just simply show the Edom Zomimim in the right direction to go to the closest Yer Mikla? Why not? So minahani mili. I'm Rav Yeshua ben Levi. I'm a krav asisim lo kasher zamam kasher zamam. We quote the pasuk from Parsha Shoftim in as it relates to Edom Zomimim. The Torah says that vasisim lo kasher zamam. You do him. Now, really, him of course means them because there are two of them. But you do to him what they conspired to do. Now, lo velo lazaro. So the Gemara says that the punishment can only affect the aid. The punishment cannot affect the children of the aid. If you were to take the aid and convert him into a halal, so that would affect him and that would affect his children, and that is not the criteria of Edom Zomimim. Edom Zomimim means it is a punishment that is only relevant to him, the aid. Huh? Galus is going to, it's a different drasha. Agree. That's going to be a different drasha. Okay.
And if the coin happens not to be a coin, then this doesn't even apply.
Agree. So the Gemara makes a suggestion which, quite frankly, is really difficult to understand. The Gemara now suggests, well, why don't we just do that? Why don't we just make the Edom Zomimim a halal, but not the future children? Even in that suggestion, I know the Gemara is going to reject the suggestion. I know the suggestion is not going to last that long. But even as a suggestion, it's really hard to understand how you can do that. How you can make somebody a limited halal. Him, but not his children. Okay. So, So, be'in and kasher zamam. That's the Gemara's rejection. Be'in and kasher zamam la'sos v'leika. So the Gemara says, yeah, but that's not what they intended. They intended that the defendant become a halal, his children, his grandchildren, v'chulei, v'chulei. So if I were to just make him, the Edom, a halal, so then we haven't met the requirement of kasher zamam. Okay, so therefore, rejected out of hand. Although it's not rejected, it still was suggested in the Gemara. I know I'm belaboring the point, I apologize. I just don't even understand it as a suggestion. But, okay, one day I will. Barpada Omer Kavachomer. Barpada now is going to bring us to the same conclusion, but instead of using a drasha, he's going to try to use a logical argument, the Kavachomer. Again, the question is, why don't we do the Zomimim what they conspired to do to the defendant? They wanted the defendant to become a Chalal. Why not make the Edom Zomimim a Chalal? So Barpada Omer Kavachomer. Ma mechalal, enu mischalal, habal chalal, velo chilal, enu din shalo yischalal. Kavachomer works like this. Look. Somebody who is michalal, who successfully, and when I say successful over here, it's not positive, but successfully makes somebody a chalal. How do you successfully make somebody a chalal? So, you're a kohen, you marry a divorcee, you've made a chalal, meaning your children now are going to be chalalim. Okay? And now, with that in mind, your children now are chalalim. How about you yourself? And I know this, you know, it may sound a little bit, a little bit unfair, but the Kohen who married the divorcee, his status does not change. Meaning, even though his children are halalim, he himself does not become a halal. Okay, so, and that's exactly the point of the Gemara. Ma mechalal eino mischalal, the one who causes others to become a halal, he himself does not become a halal. Ha bali halal. You see, these Edom Zomimim, at worst, are only attempting to make somebody a halal. They didn't actually go through with it. So velo chilel, eino din shelo yischalal, so they themselves for sure should not become chalalim. Again, the argument is, someone who successfully makes others a chalal, himself doesn't become a chalal. Somebody who only attempts to make somebody a chalal, himself cannot become a chalal. The argument of Barpada.
The point of zimum is attempt.
Okay. Maskifla Ravina, im kain bitalta toras edim zomim. Danny, I think this is your point. So Ravina says, well, if you want to employ such an argument, so you know what you're doing with Edom Zomim, and you're basically uprooting it. Ma hasokel eino niskal, habaliskal, velosikel eino din shelo yisakel. So now take exactly this argument and just plug it into a regular case of Edom Zomim. So anyone who is sokel, so the, let's say you have Edom Zomim, but they weren't proven to be Edom Zomimim until it was too late. And we're going to learn later in the Masechta, a couple days from now, that if the Edom Zomimim came into court, lied, fabricated, made up a story, and Beis Din went through with the case, came down with a verdict, actually put the person to death, And then the Edom were then discovered to be Edom Zomim. Too late. We don't do to them, Kasher Zomim La'asos L'achiv, they do not get the reciprocal punishment. We're going to be seeing this on Daf Hey. We're going to try to give an explanation as to why that is. But right now, all we need to know is, it is. That's in fact the case. So, ma hasokal eino niskal. So, if you have a pair of lying witnesses who successfully got somebody killed, they now are not going to be put to death. Habaliskal velosakal eino din shalo isakel. If all you're doing is just attempting to give somebody skila, so how much more so should the Edom not be put to death? So just apply the same argument that you applied regarding the Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza, and you're going to uproot and you're going to end the entire institution of Edom Zomimim. And that obviously is an absurd conclusion. It's untenable. Gemara says, you're right. And what we're going to have to do is, Kal v'chomer was a nice attempt, but the Gemara seemingly does not accept the Kal v'chomer. We're going to go back to the drasha that we gave earlier, Vasisim Lo. It's only a punishment that could apply to him, not to his children. Meaning using the Kal v'chomer. Yeah. Well, the Kal v'chomer over here is to prevent an onish, not to give an onish.
The first one was to give an onish, no?
It was to stop the onish from occurring. Now, I know what I'm saying is not 100% because we're going to substitute it with another onish, but the Kal v'chomer is used to prevent him from being a Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza. Okay, think a little bit about what I'm saying. I think I'm right. I think so. Okay. Manani Mili. I'm sorry. Me'ini Anu Be'ish Ponichu Chayiv Galus. Case number two of our Mishnah is the case of Galus, where we're not going to do the Emzom and what they conspired, and why not? So Manani Mili, the Gemara now discusses this. Reish Lakish, I'm Reish Lakish, I'm Akra. Hu Yanus Elachas Heharim. Hu Velo Zomim. So again, it's a drasha. The Torah says he, meaning the one who killed somebody inadvertently, a rotzeach b'shogeg, so he's going to be sent to one of the ir miklat, he, and not the Edom Zomim. So, simply put, it's a drasha. Rav Yochanan amar kal v'chomer. And Rav Yochanan, once again, attempts to use a kal v'chomer to make this point that Edom Zomim are not going to be sent into galus. Uma hu sha'asa ma'isa b'meizid eino gola, hein shelo asu ma'isa b'meizid eino din shelo yigalu. So Rav Yochanan says, consider. Let's say somebody kills somebody intentionally. Is he going to be going into galus? Of course the answer is no. So he's not sent to the galus. They did an inaction intentionally. So, consider. For doing an action intentionally, you're not sent into galus. For doing an inaction intentionally, for sure you're not going to be sent to galus. Now when I say inaction, what are we talking about? We're talking about Edus. Edus is considered an inaction. It's not a maisa. Edus is testifying. It's dibor. It's speech. Now, again, we understand it's wrong, it's bad, it's all of the above, but it's not a maisa. Generally speaking, you only get punished for a maisa. You don't normally get punished for dibor. Now, for Edom Zomim, obviously, that's not true. You do get punished for dibor, which in of itself is another, I guess you could say, general question that I could have raised in the introduction, but we'll discuss a little bit later on. In the meantime, let me just repeat the Kal v'chomer. If somebody kills somebody intentionally, which is obviously an action, he's not sent to Degalus, somebody who intentionally tries to kill with not an action, meaning Edom Zomimim, so for sure they shouldn't be sent into Galus. So Eino Din Shel Yigalu, V'Eino Senes, the Gemara says, well, that Kal v'chomer doesn't work out, because Hu Sha'asa Ma'isa B'Meizid Lo Legally Ki Echido Lo Tavalei Kapara. Look, consider. When somebody is killing somebody intentionally, you know why he's not sent into Galus? Because it's not enough of a kapara. What he did was so heinous, just spending a little time in an ir miklat is not enough to amend that which he did. It's not going to help. So, but it could be, however, that if somebody is just simply conspiring to kill somebody, it could be that galus would be enough of a kapara. Meaning that the Kal v'chomer was assuming that, well, look, if you're not sent into galus for active murder, so you're not going to be sent to galus for inactive murder. The pircha on the Kal v'chomer is, well, this could all be a function of kapara. And yeah, you're not sent to galus for active murder because it's not enough of a kapara, but it could be enough of a kapara for inactive murder. Hein shelo asu ma'isa b'meizid nami legally ki echad del havalei kapara ela machvat tekedrei shlakish. So again, the Gemara says the Kav HaChomer was a nice attempt, but seemingly we're not accepting the Kav HaChomer. We're going to go back to the Drash of Reish Lakish. Amar Ula remes leitim zomim in the Torah minayin. Ula says, where is there a hint or an allusion to eitim zomim in the Torah? To which the Gemara reacts to the even premise. What do you mean, hint? What do you mean the Torah is hinting at eitim zomim? Remes leitim zomim v'aksiv v'asisim v'kasher zomim. It's a beferish pasuk. Like, what are you talking about? Ella, the Gemara says, rather, remes leitim zomim mishalokim in the Torah minayin. Right, this halacha, meaning our Mishnah, the beginning of Makos, where we're not going to be doing exactly what they intended to do to the defendant, but we're going to give a substitute. We're going to give Malkus. Like, where is that encoded in the Torah? As far as Edom and Zomim are concerned, the basic halacha, it's a pasuk, it's beferish. As far as this point of receiving Malkus substitution, where's that from? So, Dichsiv, the Torah says, V'chdik, what's the tzadik, v'yishkos, arasha, v'ayim, bin hakos, arasha. So, we turn to Psukim in Parshas Kiseitse, where the Torah describes a tzaddik becoming vindicated, a rasha becoming vilified, and vayam bin hakos a rasha. And so therefore you're going to give the rasha makos. And the Gemara asks the obvious question, Mishim di hitziko a tzaddik v'yashio a rasha vayam bin hikos a rasha. What are we doing? We're vindicating a tzaddik. What does that have anything to do with giving makos? What is the Torah talking about? So Ela Adam shir shiwas a tzaddik. So the Gemara says, so what the pasuk is saying, again, it's not beferish, but it's a remes. What the pasuk seems to be describing is the following. You have witnesses, shehir shiwas a tzaddik, who are now making up a story regarding a person. So the person's a tzaddik, he didn't do it. And witnesses now are accusing him of having done it. So v'asu edim achrine, and now comes the second pair of witnesses, v'hitzdiku a tzaddik, and what they did is, they vindicated the tzaddik by disproving the first set of witnesses. So now the second set of witnesses now have taken somebody whose reputation was impugned and has salvaged his reputation. Wonderful. That's Hitzdiku as a tzaddik, the imikara. Vishavin alahan rishayim. And now what they've done is they made the first set of witnesses enim zomimim, meaning rishayim. V'haya im bin hikos arasha. And then, under certain circumstances, they're going to receive malchus. When are they going to receive malchus? Like our examples of our Mishnah. When I can't do to them what they conspired to do to the defendant, so then under those circumstances, we're going to give malchus. So again, it's not understood that the Torah does not spell out the cases that we're discussing in our Mishnah, but at least it's a remes. Tepik lemi lo sane. Gemara asks a simple question. Well, why not give malchus based on one of the aseret dibros? You're not allowed to falsely testify, right? The eighth dibra in the Torah is lo sane b'recha aid. You can't falsely testify against somebody else. So why not give malchus for just that? Mishum dahavi lav shem b'maisa v'chol lav shem b'maisa in lokin alav. Answers the Gemara because that's an inaction. That's dibor. That's not a maisa. You don't get malchus for a dibor. You only get malchus for an action. Okay. Tana rabbanan. Dal dvarim nemru be'inim zomimim. Ein asa ben grusha ben chalutza. Ein golan lari miklat. Ein mashalmim esakofer. Ve'inim karim be'evet ivri. So four halachas in which by Edom Zomimim, you don't do to them what they conspired to do to the other. So there are four examples. I didn't explain them because I know we're going to go through each one in depth. And then there's a fifth, Mishum Rabbi Kiva. It said over in the name of Rabbi Kiva, Amru Af Ein Mishamim Alpi Atzman. They're not going to have to pay if they make an admission on their own that they were Edom Zomimim. And again, in a little bit, probably the beginning of tomorrow, I'm going to explain Rabbi Kiva. So let's go through each one of them. The four, possibly five times in halacha where we're not going to do what to the Edim Zomim where they conspired. So Einas and Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza Kedamar. So the first one of the four is that the Edim Zomim do not become a Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza. That already was explained this morning. That was our Mishnah. The Gemara explained where it comes from. Okay. Number two. Ein Golan La'ari Miklat Kedamar. They're not sent into a near Miklat if they're accusing somebody of Ritzicha B'Shogig. Again, we already explained that this morning. We move on. Ein mishalmim es hakofer. Okay, they don't pay kofer. Now, what is it? What are they accusing somebody of doing or having done? So, a person is an owner of a shore, and the shore now comes out to be a shore amuad, meaning this shore now historically has gone after people, right? Killed one, two, three people, and now from this point going forward, now the shor is a shor hamuad. Now, yes, of course, the shor should have been killed after its first murder. Okay, that's what's called the shor haniskal. But the Gemara Baba Kama deals with this. How come the shor wasn't put to death yet? Whatever the case is, now the animal is a shor hamuad. And now this animal went after a fourth guy. Now there's a fourth victim. Torah says to the owner of the animal, enough already. Well, I'm paraphrasing the Torah. Torah doesn't put in those words. But the Torah says to the owner, like, that is just, it's absolutely inexcusable. It wasn't excusable the first time, but at this point in time now, your animal killed somebody for a fourth time? So, really the truth of the matter is that gam ba'alav yumas. The owner of the animal should be put to death. Now, the owner of the animal is not going to be put to death, meaning the owner of the animal didn't kill. His animal killed. But the Torah says, gam ba'alav yumas, the owner should be put to death. However, we say to the owner, but you can pay your way out of death. Right? The only time in halacha where you pay your way out of death. And what happens is that the Torah says that you can pay now what's called kofar. You, the owner of the animal, instead of being put to death, so you're going to be paying kofar. In kofar, you shot alav. Fine. So now, what the Edom Zomimim are reporting about this person is that his animal killed somebody now for a fourth time, and therefore the owner is responsible to pay kofar. What we're now learning together is that if the Edom are proven to be Edom Zomimim, they're not going to be paying kofar. That's the third halacha, in which we're not going to do what they attempted to do the defendant. Now, why not? Gemara explains. The Ein Mishamim as a kofar kasavri kufra kapara. When the Torah says you pay kofar, how do we view kofar? Really, kofar could be viewed as one of two things. Kofar could be viewed as restitution. You can't pay for a loss of life. There is no value to a loss of life, but, understood, but, in other words, you're responsible for somebody's death. Again, you didn't kill him, but, so trying to make some restitution for the loss of life. Okay, and so one way to view the kofar is that just simply it's some form of restitution, tashlumen. Or another way to view kofar, which the Gemara now is entertaining, is that no, it's not restitution, but rather it's there to simply provide kapara. Meaning the owner of the animal really was irresponsible for allowing his animal now to have killed a fourth time, and therefore the Torah says, you want a kapara, you got to pay.
Doesn't the word kofar itself mean something?
Right. And it's the second way that I just presented, it seems to be much more sensible, considering that the word kofar actually has in it the shorish, right. Kapara. I also like it also sounds better when it says a kapara. It just happens to be that I know the Gemara entertains both. So, I'm kind of handcuffed in that regard. So, v'hani la b'nei kapar ninu. So, now what the Gemara is suggesting is the following. Look, if in fact the person's animal did in fact kill and he has to pay, so he'll pay. In other words, in that payment is a kapara. But for the Edom Zomimim, it's not their animal that killed. So they're not going to be paying kofar because, quite frankly, they don't need the kapara. Now, of course, they're not good people. they're not tzaddikim. They conspired against somebody and they falsely testified in court. But in terms of kapara, if they were to pay the money, they'd be paying money that's providing a kapara that, quite frankly, they don't need. Their animal didn't kill anybody. So the Gemara says exactly for that reason. So mantan kufra kapara. So the Gemara says, now who's the author of this opinion that the way to view kofar is that it's a kapara? Am Rav Chista, Rabbi Shmuel, Benosha, Rav Yochan, Membroke, he did Tanya. So the Gemara says it's based on the opinion of Rabbi Yishmael, as the Gemara quotes the Braisa. Benosan pidyon nafsho. The Torah, when describing the payment of kofar, says that you have to pay pidyon nafsho, a redemption. Now, Demei Nizak, Rabbi Shmuel, Benosha, Rav Yochan, Membroke, Omar, Demei Mazik. So you pay his nefesh. Now, his nefesh, of course, is a pronoun. Who is it describing? Not totally clear. Machlokas amongst the Tanayim. According to the Tanakama, you pay the value of the Nizak, of the one who was killed. According to Rabbi Shmuel, you pay the value of the Mazik, the one who, I should say, did the killing, but the owner of the animal. So now, we're trying to assess somebody's value, and that's what the owner of the animal has to pay. So the Gemara gives now what it seems to be a very reasonable explanation. My la ba'aka miflagi. Mar savra kufra mamona, umar savra kufra kapara. And maybe what is that issue over here is how to view kofar. If kofar is money and it's restitution, so then obviously you would look at the value of the victim. Find out how much you would go on the open market, and that's what you're going to be paying the family, trying to somehow compensate for the loss of life. If, however, kofar is a kapara, so then whose nefesh should you be assessing? Your nefesh, because you're trying to now somehow provide a kapara for yourself. So then the assessment would be based on your value, not the value of the victim. Seemingly a very reasonable explanation. Amar Papa lo. Rav Papa says, no, we can give a different explanation. Dekulei amar kufra kapara. Everyone's of the opinion that kofar is in fact a kapara. So, and then, even though kofar is a kapara, then it's just simply a debate of whose nefesh we're going to assess in terms of how you're going to pay. Now, obviously, it makes much more sense that we should be assessing the owner of the animal and not the victim. If it's a kapara, and you're trying to be mechaper for yourself, so you're going to pay your value. My time out of the Rabbanan. So the Gemara says, so can we try to understand the Chachamim a little bit better? In that they view it as a kapara, but we're going to look at the value of the victim. Why should that be? So the Gemara says, Nemar hashas alamata v'nemar hashas alamala. Mala halam b'denizak afkam b'denizak. So the Gemara says, well, I'm not going to give a rational explanation, but basically, gzera shav in the Torah. There are two psukim that are proximate to one another in Parshas Mishpatim, one having to do with kofar, another one having to do with a woman getting damaged, having her fetus miscarried. And the Torah in both cases uses a verb of the hashasa, just like over there we're talking about the value of the nizak. So to over here we're talking about the value of the nizak, not the mazik. So it's not a rational explanation. It's basically psukim gzereshav, if you will. Rabbi Shmuel v'nasan pidyon avsho ksiv. And as far as Rabbi Shmuel is concerned, v'nasan pidyon avsho, meaning the Torah says you have to give your redemptive value. V'rabbanan ein pidyon avsho in. So the Chachamim say, yeah, pidyon avsho ksiv miyuki shaminan b'denizak shaminan. And the Chachamim will just simply counter by saying, I agree. It is served as a pidyon. It does redeem the owner of the animal. But just in terms of how to assess, we assess based on the victim, not based on the owner. And finally, for today, Ein Nimkarim Be'Eved Ivri. Not sold as an Eved Ivri, meaning we have the witnesses now coming and accusing the defendant of having stolen. The defendant presumably does not have the money to pay. What would now happen to the defendant? He's going to have to be sold as an Eved Ivri to pay off his debt. In the event that the witnesses now are lying, totally fabricating the story, so here's another example where they are not going to be sold as an Eved Ivri, and we don't do exactly Vasisim Lo Kasher Zamam Lasos L'Achiv. So Sefer Avamnuna L'Memar. Now over here, there obviously are a number of variables to consider, meaning who doesn't have money to pay off the debt. So Sefer Avamnuna L'Memar Hani Mile Hechad Yisrei L'Didei. So we're talking about a case where he has money. Demigu de iu lo nizdavin, inu nami lo mizdavnu. So since he is not going to be sold, he meaning the defendant, so they, the Edom Zomim, are not going to be sold as well. Aval hecha de leif lu didei, afa gav de islu li didu, mizdavnu. So, but what about a scenario where he didn't have money, the defendant, where he would have been sold? So what Rav Amnuna now is suggesting is that under those circumstances, the Edom Zomim are going to be sold. Because that's what they conspired to do to the defendant, so therefore they should be sold. So to which the Gemara says, well, can the Edom Zomim say to the defendant, look, granted what we did was terrible. We went to court, we lied, etc., etc. But if you would have had money, would you have been sold? No, of course not. So in other words, so we shouldn't be sold, meaning we have the money, we could pay off the debt, so we're not going to be sold as an Eved Ivri. Elasav Rav Amnuna Lamemar, so the Gemara says, okay. So Rav Amnuna walks back his statement, but tries now another approach. And that is, Hanim Ilehechad Islu Olididei Olididu. If either the defendant or the Edom Zomim had money and a means of paying off the stolen item, so then they're not going to be sold as an Eved Ivri. Avahechad Aleithlu Olididei Olididu Mizdavne. However, If neither the defendant nor the Edom Zomim had money, so Rav Hamnuna now is going to try to argue, is under these circumstances, we now have a classic case of v'asisim lo kasher zamam lasos lachiv. We could do to the edim zomimim what they conspired to do to the witness. I'm sorry, to the defendant. And why not? Meaning, we're talking about where it's now on a level playing field. Neither of them have money. Amalei Rava v'nimker b'gnevaso amarachmana b'gnevaso v'lo b'zamamo. So the Gemara says, the argument is plausible, but we have a drasha. And the drasha teaches us that who is sold as an Eved Ivri? Only the Ganav himself, not the Zomimim. Meaning the Din HaZama would dictate and make a strong argument that the Edom Zomimim should be sold as an Eved Ivri, but the drasha tells us that only the Ganav himself and not the Edom Zomimim. So far what we got over this morning are two cases in the Mishnah, another two cases in the Braisa, where we're unable to meet the criteria of Vasisim lo kasher zamam lasos lachiv. In the cases of the Mishnah, we know that Malkus becomes the fair substitute. Admittedly, in the cases of the Braisa, the two cases of the Braisa, that of Kofar and that of being sold as an Eved Ivri, it's unclear exactly what is going to become the fate of the Edom Zomimim, considering that we can't do to them what they conspired to do to the defendant. But now four cases that we learned in the first daf of Makos, where we're unable to do exactly Vasisim lo kasher zamam lasos lachiv.